Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And if you're listening to us, that means it's Monday, Hollow Cult. So, welcome back to your work week. Thanks for choosing us to hang out with you. Kind of fuel you to get through it. If you're new here, welcome. First off, me and Kyle like to talk a little bit. Got some house cleaning we do at the beginning of the show. If you're not into it, you can fast forward 5 or 6 minutes to get to the meat of the episode. But if you want to listen to us talk, feel free to hang out. If you're not new here, welcome back, you weirdo. What are you even doing? Just sticking with it. We appreciate you. That being said, we're going to get through the business. So check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. Come hang out with us. Join the community. Join the cult. It's a good time. Everybody has fun. It's just all around cool thing to do. If you have a paranormal experience that you'd like to share with the rest of the cult and us and have it featured on our Thursday show, listener experience show, Kyle's got some details for you.
I do. HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. That's the email that you need to send your story to. If, and I mean only if, you want to be famous. If you don't, well, that's on you. Because we're here to be the curators of all the weird. That's our job. So help us do our job. This help is on us. You guys.
Help us help you help us.
Exactly.
It's science, really. Simple science.
It is. It really is. And all that information and more is in the show notes.
Always.
Yeah, you click that little drop-down thingamajig. You'll find it in there.
Simple.
It is simple. It's not rocket appliances.
It isn't. But if you'd like to support this endeavor, that we're this mission that we're on, this journey, if you will, plenty of ways you can do it. We have a Patreon. You can go sign up for that, $7 a month. You get Patreon exclusive episodes. You get all of our regular episodes early and ad free. For the people that hate the ads out there, that's a way you can avoid them. You get Casket Breath Jams, our super sick AI band that covers every genre you could think of. You get information on merch drops. Sometimes you get merch coupons, all kinds of stuff over there. Speaking of merch, HollowSkyPodcast.com. Go over there, search up, hit the merch tab. You can find some cool items over there. Shirts, hats, beanies, stickers, all kinds of stuff for you to rep the Hollow Cult in. Keep spreading the word. Speaking of spreading the word, that's the best thing you can do. Go out, share the show, keep the show growing. Share it on social media, share the lives, just keep it rolling. It's free, it's easy. We all like free and easy things, right? So definitely keep pushing. Also, you can go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review, which I normally go to Apple to find, but we've kind of tapped out on there. So Apple users, let's start hitting them 5 stars and reviews. That helps us kind of push the algorithm a little bit. One space that we have not tapped into is Facebook, which we do have some 5-star rating and reviews on Facebook.
How's that work?
They just say, hey.
Oh, okay.
You're cool. We say, yes, we are.
I'll take that.
So this week's rating and review comes to us from Facebook and our friend Charmaine. Charmaine says, an amazing podcast that will have you wanting more. Steve and Kyle know how to keep an audience coming back, and the fact that there are so many high-quality episodes mean you can just keep binging. Well, Charmaine from Facebook, thank you for taking the time to leave us that rating and review.
Yeah, Chameleon Air, we appreciate it a lot.
And sorry I forgot about Facebook. It's Facebook, though. Like, you know. But yeah, I'm gonna go through some of them. We got a couple over there. I'm gonna go
That's cool.
through them, start knocking them out.
That's cool. We'll take the love any way we can get it.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely appreciate it. The final way you can help support the show is support our fine sponsors, which you will hear from now. Hey, Holocult. We are back and excited to announce our continued partnership with Mood. Mood is an online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Mood's mantra is that cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But most importantly, they believe in supporting American farmers who make all of this possible. Mood was created in 2002 as an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. Mood has gummies for literally everything: immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. That's no pesticides, no BS, and they ship to most U.S. states. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I'd mentioned, Holocult listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO. That's H-O-L-O. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use our promo code HOLO, that's H-O-L-O, at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Hey, Holocult. You may have heard of HelloFresh. They send chef-crafted recipes and fresh ingredients to your home. But this summer, they made their biggest menu upgrade yet. This isn't the HelloFresh you remember. It's bigger. HelloFresh has doubled its menu. Now you can choose from 100 options each week, including new seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. It's healthier. Feel great with their new healthier menu filled with high-protein and veggie-packed recipes. It's also tastier. Get steak and seafood recipes delivered every week at no extra cost. Now there's 3 times more seafood on the menu. Also, new seasonal produce each week, from snap peas to stone fruit, corn on the cob, and more. Me and my partner use HelloFresh, and I cannot recommend it enough. The last HelloFresh meal we had was the tomato, mozzarella, and creamy pesto panini. It was delicious. The ingredients were fresh, and everything came together perfectly. The sourdough bread was a great base for a combination of the rich cream cheese and fresh mozzarella. That was balanced out perfectly with the acidity from the fresh tomato and the bright pesto. The arugula salad with Dijon vinaigrette was a great light side to round out the meal. It was as simple as making a grilled cheese, but exponentially more tasty. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Holo1Pod10FM now to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on your first box. New subscribers only and varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/HOLO, the number 1, POD, the number 10, FM, to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. And just like that, we are back. Kyle's about to get into some weirdness.
I am. And I love, which seems to happen to me more times than not anymore, I love just randomly hitting something up and it turning out to be awesome.
Like us.
It was a couple weeks ago. I was just trolling through Amazon, looking at books, you know, because I'll buy them once in a while if they're cheap. And I bought 2 books. The last one was kind of the last episode I did on the Shining ones. And then I bought this other one just because the title was cool. The book title is 1975, The Untold Story Behind a Real UFO Invasion. So I hear that, or I read that, and I'm like, fucking, I'm in.
Same.
I'm in. I'm trying to get with this invasion, something I don't know about. Even though, come to find out, we do kind of know about it a little bit. It has to do with the UFO flap that happened where the UFOs were kind of fucking with our nuclear bases.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what this all stems around. And it's kind of nice because the book, I'm like 3 chapters in. I'm already just kind of floored by the information that's in there. So shout out to the author of the book, which I don't have your name right now. And I apologize. That's my bad. but your book is phenomenal. It's already got me locked the fuck in.
It's crazy. Like we've been publicly in the game for 6.5 years, closing in on 7. And we've delved into the paranormal well before that. It's wild to me that we are still coming across shit that we have never heard before.
I know. And what's crazy is like we've heard about these encounters where the UFOs fuck with our nuclear bases. But that's about as far as most people go with it. You know, you'll have the rumor once in a while they fuck with the nuclear codes. They did this, they did that. But the stories are so much more elaborate than that. And I fucking, A, everybody knows that I love stories. And B, I hate when people undermine details. They leave details out that are so fucking crucial to the entirety of the topic. It drives me fucking crazy. Because there's things in here that I did not know that now it makes me question everything.
Yeah, because usually, like especially with the crux of this topic, you hear that the UFOs interfered with the missile silos, with the nukes.
Yeah.
And like, that's all you really get out of it. You're like, exactly. And that's crazy enough as it is. But like you said, once you start delving in and there's all these other threads and links that are weird that just completely get like overlooked because you have UFOs interacting with military and stuff.
Yeah, and it's also crazy too because I feel like and I could be wrong, you know, I could be wrong, but I feel like when it comes to these encounters where the UFOs mess with our nuclear arsenal, I feel like a lot of people lean toward the idea that they did it for the betterment of humanity. Because at that time, we were in the Cold War, right? But at the end of this, let's circle back and talk about that. I'd like to see where your brain goes after this episode.
That is the narrative that they like to spin. Like, oh, hey, they were here to help us, to protect us.
And, you know, I would have bought that at a time when I heard they were just disarming everybody's nukes. Sure.
And they kind of painted that narrative too, especially like after all that stuff, like the UFO phenomena, the modern UFO phenomena really kicked off after we hit that precipice of like nuclear technology.
Yeah.
After World War II, after all the missile tests, that's when Roswell sparked and then cattle mutilation sparked and like the abduction scenarios like went off the chain. It's like that narrative kind of painted itself that when we developed that technology, everybody started like noticing us in the universe.
And that may very well be the case. I'm not really sure. And I'm really excited to see where this book goes. Thankfully, because I know Steve also has a multi-parter lined up as well. Mine is definitely a multi-parter, but it's like quarantined off from one another. So it's not, as of right now, I don't feel like the stories are interlocking. You know, they're just kind of, this is what happened during this time.
They're their own entities in the same universe.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely it. So the world in the 1970s was in a pretty volatile state, as everyone, well, most people should know. The United States and Russia were in the middle of a Cold War. At the time, both sides were trying to advance on all fronts: technology, dominance of land, sea, air, and space. The Strategic Air Command was a massive part in the United States' nuclear deterrent strategy. These SAC bases had things like intercontinental ballistic missiles, nuclear bombs, fleets of B-52s. All of these installations, as you can imagine, had layers and layers and layers of security. They don't want anybody fucking with these bases. And you're talking at the time that the technology that they had and the security that they had was top of the line. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't no joke. They had rapid response fighter squadrons always on standby. like always on standby, ready to rock. They were constantly running drills to keep everybody on their toes. They also had highly advanced radar systems. Not to mention, at the time, these places were gems that our government and military had every intention of keeping protected. However, things get a little bit fucking strange with these facilities, because bizarre crafts would enter or begin to enter the airspace and let everyone know they were entering the airspace. The world, or they would enter these airspaces and move with insane speeds, trajectories. They also had technological capacities that were and are simply unmatched. Even more so for the time, they would hover silently over restricted areas. They would dart off at impossible speeds and angles. They would even disrupt communications and radar systems. And I'm going to hit on this real quickly, and then we're going to swing back to it. So one of the first examples that are given is the Loring Air Force Base. It happened on October 27, 1975. Personnel at the base reported unidentified craft hovering just past the perimeter of the base. I assume in official reports, this object gets referred to as a black helicopter, which is interesting that we will circle back to, because this kind of fucked with my head. However, the lack of sound and its unusual flight characteristics told a different story. Not to mention, this object had a very unique radar signature, all of which suggests that it wasn't a helicopter. You know, as you can imagine, once the object was spotted by personnel and radar, they sent people after it. However, this thing was able to evade capture and avoid any confirmation of identification.
Which is wild.
Yeah. It's really not that wild, though, when you hear the entirety of the story. Because, and that's kind of what I want to point out, is that when it comes to these types of situations, this is the type of story that you get. Almost exactly what I'm just telling you. Right? And whenever, here in a minute, when we break down the entirety of the Loring Air Force Base encounter, it is so much better than this. Because all of that right there, that little, those little paragraphs pique our interest. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh shit, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But when you hear the entirety of the story, you know, I'm going to say all the details. However, we probably don't have all the details, but all the details that are left out in these stupid little summaries of encounters, you are going to realize how important it is for all these details, because it blows your fucking mind.
It's crazy that it like you, we talk about this a lot, that we like stumble onto things like, hey, using the term synchronicity, but it kind of is that. Because like we're coming right off the McGuire Air Force Base, incident, which happened in 78, which is essentially right in the same pocket. They also had nuclear missiles on the base.
That it might actually be in the book that I'm reading. I don't know yet.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's very possible that it's in there. Because I have every intention of finishing the book, because it's just the first three chapters have just captivated me.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about this event is, one, they knew right away this is a massive breach in security, and two, everyone there had this overwhelming sense of unease. Like, they knew that this thing wasn't just alien to our airspace. One could only imagine right away when the object was, and keep in mind, as I'm reading this, it's almost not going to make sense. Because I'm kind of reading through the book and rewriting in my own words and my own thoughts. But it's very interesting now that I'm reading back how it transpires. One, you know, because I say one could only imagine right away when the object was first spotted how they all felt. And at that time in history, like, I feel like those people on that base would have automatically assumed it was Russian.
Yeah, because, like, that's what's going on. Like, that's enemy A number one.
Yeah.
If you've got a craft you can't identify, your brain is going directly to that.
Yeah.
That ties into McGuire, too, because that's exactly who he thought the entity on the base was yeah. some sort of spy. Which yep. I'm sure that they've been trained. Like, if somebody's here that's not supposed to be here, if there's a vehicle here that's not supposed to be here, someone in the airspace is not supposed to be here, assume it's Soviet.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. I guarantee you they thought the Russians were making a play at the base.
Yep.
Only to find out it was definitely not a Russian plane. Without question, they are going to find this out. Something else that was weird about the time, because we do focus on these installations getting visited constantly, people to this day still heavily reference these accounts. But what most people don't reference and make the connection is that during this time, and I did not know this, during this time, abductions were going up as well.
Around the area?
Around the area. So that's something that's interesting, right? Because we always focus on the fact that these UFOs were fucking with our nuclear weapons. We completely neglect the fact that during this time, most likely somehow, in the time that these craft are visiting the base, abductions are going up to the roof.
That's weird.
There was an extraordinary surge in people reporting abduction phenomena while all this was going on. And like I said, it not only was it happening on the bases, apparently, but it was happening to the civilians in the surrounding area. Civilians and servicemen and women began reporting very strange things. Dreams of bright lights, metallic rooms, strange beings. People also began to start reporting missing time from minutes to hours. So, and this is a real question, which we will circle back to, because like I said, I'm kind of a jump around situation. And I think you guys all understand when it comes full swing. But a question I had was how, in the grand scheme of it, when it comes to missing time, and at the end of this, we get back into missing time, and I think it's really going to fuck people up. But, you know, when it comes to the reporting missing time of several minutes, that gets a little bit wishy-washy for me. You know what I mean? Because how, like, we don't always, our bodies get into such routines that our brain almost purges continuous actions that we do all the time. You know what I mean? It's almost like consistency or complacency, and our brain will just purge that.
Yeah. We're not programmed to, like, catalog every minute of our day.
Right.
You know, like I can get lost in doing something and then turn around and look at the clock and it's an hour and a half after what the last time I looked, and I'm like, oh shit, I thought I was only doing something for 15 minutes, you know?
Yep.
So, and like specifically with driving, sometimes I'll be driving and I'll be locked in.
Yeah.
And by the time I refocus, which I'm sorry for everybody else on the road, I'll be like 25 miles past where I thought I was.
So that was literally the question I was going to ask, is when do we all seem to experience that the most? And I think everyone would collectively go to driving, right? But put a pin in that. We're going to come back to that. But what we can't be faked with this was people that would wake up with scars or physical symptoms from these abductions. All the while, of course, the government does what the government does and begins to deny, deny, deny. You know, it was a weather balloon. Oh, you just misidentified that. It's a atmospheric phenomena. No. It was a UFO, and the aliens are, without question, coming to probe more than our defenses.
It's swamp gas, Kyle. Swamp gas and the planet.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's definitely gas where they're probing stuff. But I'm sure at the time, it was really interesting time to be alive, because apparently the phrase mutual annihilation was used fairly often. You know, I can only imagine how paranoid everyone was during this time, which to me would suggest that the governments were 100% for a minute blaming each other for these types of crazy encounters. Which makes me think, on one hand, we hear about these aliens, they came down and fucked with the code so we couldn't annihilate each other. But what if, you know, just hear me out, what if these fuckers were taunting us, trying to get us to nuke one another?
That's exactly what I thought.
Right?
Whenever you started into that sentence, I'm like, what if they're trying to manipulate us to send these some bitches off?
And I think to be fair, I think unknowingly, as I'm writing this episode, we do kind of circle back to that in a roundabout way. But I'm going to continue on with my thoughts as I'm writing this. So because of the time, you know, you're dealing with two very powerful forces. Neither force wants to be a bitch. However, neither force wants to create a situation that essentially gets them wiped off the map. Then you have these aliens come down and start mixing around with bases and confusing everything, which blurs the lines. And, you know, all it would take is for someone to convince themselves that the Russians had some type of advanced technology. They're in our airspace. And, well, you know, at that point, the world looks a lot different today.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, think about it. That's all it would take is for somebody to convince themselves, without question, this is a Russian craft. That's all it would take. And then our government go, yeah, we're not having this shit. No fucking way.
I just Googled right off the rip to see if Soviet Union nuclear bases were also being effed with by UFOs. And yeah, there are tons of accounts.
Right.
So they were gone both sides. Messing around.
Yeah. Well, they were fucking with more than just us and the Russians too, which we'll hit that in a little bit as well. At the time, you know, SAC or Strategic Air Command, like I said earlier, they were on high alert 24/7. You know, they were a group of individuals that essentially had the ability to nuke the goddamn planet. So they're always running drills. You know, they imagine the amounts of stress these people were under all the fucking time. And like we've discussed, SAC had some of the baddest radar systems on the planet. However, when these objects started appearing, it really sent them for a ride, because the people watching these radars every minute of every day, waiting for a ping to essentially set it all off. So I just imagine a group of people just fucking fried out of their minds. They're super stressed. Then all of a sudden this blip hits a screen and they start freaking out. And then all of a sudden this blip that's supposed to be on the fucking screen disappears. Just unexplainably disappears, which for the time should not happen. And that's exactly what happened when these UFOs would come into the airspace. They would appear on these screens and then they would vanish. Sometimes, which would be far more alarming, is that the ground personnel and the pilots in real time are witnessing some unknown craft violate our airspace, and the SAC radar would pick up nothing. It wouldn't even be confirmed on radar at all. So now, you know, you have these guys who are trained to intensely rely on these radar systems, and they're failing them. So now they're like, well, what's going on? Are these craft invisible to our radar, or are the radars fucking up? Now we don't know what to do. Now it's almost like being dead in the water for those guys.
Yeah, because at that point, like you don't know what the hell's going on.
Exactly.
You got craft appearing and disappearing on your radar. You got like actual visual confirmation of something in your airspace, which is not showing up on radar. So you have no evidence that it's even there aside from your own eyes seeing it. And that like that in itself just had you questioning everything.
Yep. And it's crazy because, you know, like I said, these radars were the backbone to the military's aviation, and they were supposed to be providing extremely precise information on objects entering our airspace. That way we could intercept it before anything bad happens. And instead of these radar anomalies being logged properly, they started shoving them all into classified channels. All of this was to keep it from getting to the public and creating a mass panic situation, which rightfully so during the time, because like I said, we were so worried and stressed about the possibility of us and Russia blowing each other up. I could 100% understand why they would want to keep this under the radar for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And the military informed everyone that if a sighting were to take place, you are to keep it under tight protocols. This is now classified information and it will be pushed up the chain of command properly. Not to mention, you throw in the idea that this could possibly be Russia and we have a massive crisis on our hands. So like I said, they were to keep all information under lock and key and keep people from freaking out, just to help keep blinders on everybody. However, and I love to hear and say this, this did the complete opposite. It actually ended up boosting curiosity and speculation. So by keeping such tight security around it, it justified all the people that had been looking into the phenomena previously. Another thorn in the side of this cover-up was people having missing time. One example, which is terrifying, that was given, was people who would be driving and then not remember how they got somewhere.
Cool.
Which I'm pretty sure we've all experienced.
Cool. I do that. Like I would do that sometimes driving home after working midnights. Like I'll remember looking at a specific like geographical point, like landmarker. And then the next thing I know, I'm on 16. Like I'll be that marker will be like on 255. Next thing I know, I'm on 16, like 2 minutes from my house.
Bro, that like, is so, I drove, so scary.
I drove through towns. Drove through towns and did not remember.
Yeah, that and it's so scary to me because I've done it too where I'm like, oh my God, did I stop at that stop sign back there?
Exactly.
Did I just blast through the stoplights? Like, did I do that? I don't know.
So much so that I'm like, which route did I take home?
Yeah.
Like, which streets did I take? Because it will be nothing. It will just be like road amnesia.
It's crazy.
Or abduction.
Apparently. Or abduction. So regardless, you know, this brings a very fringe element to the conversation now, because this began to incite fear alongside the mystery and potential cover-up. And like I've been kind of alluding to earlier, I mentioned the Loring Air Force Base. We're going to take a deeper look at this. So Loring itself was apparently kind of a bad bitch of a base. It was placed in the northern Maine wilderness, almost out in the middle of fucking nowhere. It had long winters there, so you know it was kind of rough, but this place was the first line of defense against a threat. The people there were on constant exercise to ensure a swift and effective response. However, as we've kind of previously stated, October 27th, 1975, things tend to go a little bit south. Out in the middle of nowhere where the unthinkable happens, something breaches the perimeter. It was a quiet night, even a typical one at that. The stars were out and the men were patrolling the weapon storage and assumed it would just be another scripted night. You know, it's the same fucking routine every night. However, as they're looking around, they notice something strange in the distance. They see what can literally only be, and I mean this, literally can only be described as a helicopter.
I was going to ask that. when we were talking about things getting in their airspace, I'm like, how did they get to the idea that it was a helicopter?
Okay. But
if they're looking at a helicopter.
Well, here we are.
That's how it's a helicopter.
It's not so much that. So what happens is this object is obviously far off and they see it coming. And it has this fucks me all types of up.
I love it.
They describe it as a helicopter because it has a red navigational light, which is glowing, and a strobe like white light that pulsed. So by all reasons, they're watching an unknown helicopter fly in. It has the marker lights of a fucking helicopter.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Air identification lights of a helicopter.
Yeah, and then later on, we'll explain what the craft actually looks like. So they keep watching this thing as it's getting closer, and they slowly start to realize, wait a minute, something's off here. This object is moving with a fluidity that a helicopter just can't achieve. On top of all that, one of the telltale signs of a helicopter is the sound. Well, they don't hear any sound. Nothing. And the fact that now it's just hovering, right? It's just hovering over this area. And it's not making a sound. And the way that it's hovering has this eerie precision to it. It's not bobbing up and down. Not moving subtly left and right. It's just perfectly sitting there. And now it's over the weapon storage area, just hovering.
That's not
so the alarm gets sounded, right? And the base goes into a frenzy. Radar operators start to confirm that the presence is not a helicopter. They said the object appears on screen right at the edge of their detection, and then it starts doing the circling calculated pattern, almost like the way they described it is it was systematically scanning the area for something.
This was while the guys who had eyes on it saw it stationary?
I don't think so. I think the way it gets wrote is a little bit strange, but I'm thinking that as the object was first coming in, I think that's when it was running this systematical,
like a grid sweep almost.
Yes, I think that's what's happening. Okay. In the radar, because the radar operators confirm it as soon as it hits the very boundary of their radar. So they see it. They see it come into their airspace on radar.
I was going to say that's crazy. If visual confirmation, it's hovering. Radar confirmation, it's grid sweeping. That would be,
yeah.
Which there probably are cases like that out there.
I wouldn't doubt it. So, like I said, it breaks the perimeter of the weapon storage area. The people monitoring said they had this bizarre sense of helplessness when this happens. Ground teams in the area said they were watching this thing go up and down with alarming speed. It was covering impossible distances, and then all of a sudden, it just vanishes from sight, only to reappear in an entirely different area. No matter what the military did, they didn't stand a chance against this thing. It was like they're trying to drill and intercept this thing, and its movements were so unpredictable and sophisticated at this point, they couldn't. After it essentially makes a mockery of the defense systems, it just vanishes. So as you can imagine, the base goes into a mode of attempting to figure all this out. They go over the radar logs and basically say this thing was like almost like X-Men's Nightcrawler. It's blipping all around the radar, just pinging here and then pinging over there, all over the place. And to them, and maybe even still to this day, it had no predictable patterns at all. They could not pin this thing down.
That's so weird, man. That it was almost like, I don't know if it was like dimensional travel or like wormhole technology, or
it's crazy. And oddly enough, as I'm sure Steve is kind of thinking the same thing, a lot of the guys on the base felt like this thing was doing nothing but taunting them. Like it knew it was being watched and it just put on a fucking show.
Take a second and put yourself in one of those officers' shoes. You're seeing this thing and you're seeing it outmaneuver everything we've got. Just laughing in our faces all over our military base. It's supposed to be fully protected airspace and all that. Considering the time, where does your brain go? Does it go, is this Soviet technology that's so far advanced that we are fucked? Or does it go to, I'm seeing something that isn't of this earth?
So initially, without the description of the craft, if I can't see the craft itself, even if I see it, I think in those first moments, I think it's the Soviets.
Which,
right, like just instantaneously, because we've been drilled so hard on that.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But once the encounter's over, because you got to remember, 75 ain't too far away from 47. I think once the encounter's over and it starts to sink in, then I start contemplating, is this aliens that people have talked about, you know, from Roswell and shit?
Yeah. And then it makes you wonder, which is the scarier implication, that the Soviets could be this far ahead of us, or that we're dealing with something that we have no idea where its intentions are.
I think I would be more scared if I knew for a fact that it was the Soviets.
Yes. Yeah. Especially since we are their enemy at this juncture.
Yeah. Yeah. But the guys were saying it would drop altitude crazy fast and hover right off the ground, only to blast off and ascend at unreal speeds. It would literally sit and hover long enough for an intercept team to be dispatched, and then it would simply just vanish.
Almost like it was like, because the 4chan Bermuda whistleblower said that these motherships underwater produce these drones. The UFOs that we see are drones, right? And these drones each have very specific reasons that they go about their business. It's almost like this one in particular was there just testing our response time, testing our reaction time,
making an absolute mockery of it.
Yeah, seeing how much of a threat we may be if they decided to come in and, I don't know, you know, check out our nukes or do whatever the fuck they want, because clearly we can't do anything back to it.
Right. And I kind of make a side note here, and I'd like to pick your brain on it, how you feel about it. You know, because a lot of things that you and I have covered and read through, in most cases, it seems like, other than maybe what you just pointed out, but it feels like aliens have really no true motive to taunt us like this. That feels human to me. Not saying that that this is human, because in most cases, you know, we've covered, it always seems like ETs have it, like, they have this disconnect from humanity, almost like they're too smart to take part in a petty fucking taunt, because we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Type situation. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels more human.
Like
if you're going to run the argument that they're testing our defenses, all right, I can buy that.
And even that doesn't make that much sense to me. You know, I feel like if they have come. Okay. If what we're dealing with is extraterrestrial, come from out of our solar system, out of our galaxy, they have traveled light years to get here. They are going to be so far advanced that we're not a threat to them. They're not going to need to test our defensive.
You're right.
If it's,
they probably knew all of our defenses before they even fucking got here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. If it's not extraterrestrial, which is what these disclosure meetings and shit with Congress is kind of pushing the narrative, the non-human intelligence, and not extraterrestrial intelligences, but non-human, that could change things a bit. If they say they're ultra terrestrial beings, they're from inside the earth or some shit, you know, I could see them wanting to test our defense systems.
Yeah.
If it comes to a point to where we
would be, like, we'd be more considered like an unknown threat at that point to them.
And we kind of, if they are like say from inside the earth, like we share the same space. So it could come to a tipping point to where we butt heads.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I don't think aliens are coming here to see like, hey, can we pick a fight with these guys? Because I feel like it's just ants in the afterbirth. They're just gonna swipe us away. If it's something that's already here, or even if it's like, I could even almost like be in the camp to where if it was interdimensional, right? Because there could be a dimension that's crossing into our veil that's very similar to ours, you know, where we could compete head to head if it come to like a skirmish to where if they come over here, they would want to check shit out. I feel like if it's extraterrestrial, they're going to be so far technologically advanced that they're not going to want to F with us. But something not extraterrestrial, I feel like would kind of want to see what we're capable of.
Yeah.
And the fact that like, if it is from Earth, the fact that we're up here detonating nukes, threatening to blow each other up, like those consequences go beyond human if something else is on the planet.
Agreed. And I don't think that gets pointed out enough either. And maybe nukes is one of the only things that we have that could fuck with them.
And it's something that they would notice, you know, because like, what's the word I'm looking for? Seismographically, like you detonate a nuke on the ground, you're going to feel it.
They're going to feel it throughout
the entire earth. So yep. I don't know, man. I just don't feel like something coming from a different part of space that made it here is going to be that worried about us.
I'm kind of in that same camp. I think you could make arguments against it, but I feel like overall you're probably right.
It then like cracks open this can of worms. Like we hear from Max Spears and stuff. Like a lot of these things are militarily like, kind of black ops, programs. Could this be that? And the upper echelons of the military just testing to see how we would respond to a threat like that.
Could be,
you know,
some of the military guys did think that it was a military exercise to keep them on their feet.
Hmm.
But it had a telltale like UFO appearance too, because it ends up like being the shape of a football, a metallic craft, all that shit. So once that object gets right up on top of them, they know it's not a fucking helicopter without question. But the story kind of also thickens and gets even weirder. Another bizarre report comes from a crewman. He said this was something out of a fucking nightmare. He said the bright pulsing lights from the craft seemed to throb with a cadence he could feel in his chest, as though it had this radiating oppressive energy to it.
Which I've read,
go ahead. Read
cases where like you've heard of alien amnesia, you've heard of alien apathy. Like there's alien hypnosis where people will see a craft and they'll note the rhythmic pulsation of the lights on the craft. And that's the last thing they remember, almost like it hypnotized it like them.
Yeah.
And then they'll wake up hours later, you know, in a different spot or something. There was one.
I could see that for sure.
One particular case that stands out in my mind. I wish I could quote where I heard it from. But this person had just been kicked out of their house and they were sleeping in their car, and they woke up they're laying down in the back seat. And they said, just out of nowhere, they see this light and it catches their attention. So they're looking at it and they're like, man, kind of looks like a plane. And as they're locking eyes with it, watching it move, they said the cadence and the rhythm of the light changed. And that's the last thing they remember. They woke up and it was like 6 hours later and they were sitting in the driver's seat holding their steering wheel.
That sucks.
So I feel like the hypnosis theory hypothesis could very well.
I like it. Yeah, for sure. It definitely makes sense.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
But in regards to this, you have, you know, even after all that, you have people talking about how their equipment began failing when this object was close. Their radios would cut out to static. Flashlights would start flickering. Vehicles even stopped, almost like this thing was kind of pushing out, almost like a repetitive EMP type pulse. Now, the craft does disappear for the night. But it comes back the second night, right?
Uninvited.
Uninvited. And this, it gets a little saucy.
Oh.
A little saucy. I'm down. So, October 28th, 1975, the second night. Maine Army National Guard gets called in and asked to provide aerial support. They send over a UH-1 Huey helicopter. This thing had advanced night searchlights on it and a M60 machine gun. They get ordered to intercept and identify the craft. And the crew was not only trained for combat, but these motherfuckers were up for the challenge. They said, bet.
They're itching.
The orders for the crew were clear, though. You are not to fire on the object unless it takes hostile actions. But this was almost unclear for the crew because up against this type of new enemy, how do you know which action is hostile and what isn't?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like,
right? Like, because this is not conventional warfare at this point. They are not training for this type of attack maneuver and shit like that. Like, this is all brand fucking new for them.
In my brain, entering restricted airspace feels like a hostile action.
Keep that in mind.
You know what I mean?
Keep that in mind. So one thing was for sure, though, the object is there. Crewmen were catching glimpses of it here and there as it does its bullshit of vanishing and appearing. Mostly, it's doing it around the nuclear storage. Then the object decides to hover over the weapon storage again. So the Huey starts to move in, closes in on the object. All the while, the helicopter's bright night searchlight is on and on the craft. So this craft is now on full display for the entirety of the base to see, because it's being lit up by this massive fucking searchlight. And even with that, the craft holds fast, just fucking sits there.
It's not giving a shit.
Which floors the guys on the Huey. They're like, this is fucked. Because we have them on full display. And they don't care.
That's some big old alien balls.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. So as they get closer, the craft displays no markings. No rotors, no exhaust, nothing to even suggest propulsion. It's just a smooth and metallic craft. So much so that it is actually reflecting the searchlight like a mirror would.
It's almost exactly what they described from McGuire.
Yeah. Well, the Huey crew leader here, he wants a piece of that ass. So he radios over to command. Command, the fact that this object is hovering over such a secure area is deemable as a threat.
That's what I'm saying.
So voice of reason comes back across the radio to the Huey crew. Permission granted to engage. Use extreme caution.
Use extreme violence. is what I hear.
Amen. Amen. So, with that being said, the M60 gunner turns on his inner Rambo and starts lighting this motherfucker up. Glowing tracers take off from the gun towards the craft. And from the pilot's perspective, the bullets should have smashed into the craft and ripped it to fucking pieces.
Didn't happen, did it?
Didn't happen. Fuck. Once these rounds hit the craft, they simply fucking vanish. No flashes, no ricochets. They don't even make a fucking sound. Almost like the craft is just absorbing all of it. Just boop, 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 boop. Think about that. It doesn't even make a fucking sound when it hits the craft.
That's that. And it just sits there, just taking belt after belt. There. Just go.
Doesn't give a fuck. The entire crew at that point essentially freezes in silence for a minute.
Yeah, that's an oh shit moment right there.
Until, like a real fucking man, like a real man, the gunner says, "Let me run that shit back." It opens fire again.
Try it again.
Once again, though, the bullets have zero effect on the object.
At that point, you're like,
"Oh, we're fucked."
Piss.
We're fucked.
Yeah, just turn that helicopter around, go back home.
So the pilot of the Huey circles away to maintain visual. With that, the crew realize real fast that we're fucked and have no idea what we're up against. Command radios for them to disengage and head back to base. Yep,
that's what I said.
None of the guys argue. They said, fuck it, let's go.
That's what I said. You put another volley at it and it doesn't do anything. Yeah, boys, we're out of our element.
We're donezo. And
we live to fight another day.
That's right. As the Huey team is leaving the area, the craft then shoots straight up into the night sky, disappearing. The military, as a collective, knew at this point we're fucked.
That's the same thing that McGuire did when he either fired a shot into the sky or he fired a shot at it, and it just goes, whoop.
Okay,
like, oh, we're good. This is you're throwing rocks at us. Is this what you're doing? Like, all right, see ya.
That wasn't the only strange thing to take place that night, though.
Those rocks had an effect on the alien from McGuire. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I ain't no shit. October 28th, so the same night, the machine gun goes off at the UFO. Around midnight, a local resident in the area was driving on a road a few miles from the base. Just, you know, he's just out driving. He's out on this dark road all by himself when all of a sudden his car starts to sputter. Lights dim, engine dies, he goes to a stop. So he grabs his flashlight and he's like, well, I'm going to get out here. I'm going to go check underneath the hood, see what's up. But before he could even reach his flashlight, he gets hit with this extreme drowsiness. What seemed like moments later, he finds himself parked, you know, at the roadside. And he has his flashlight in his lap. But when he looks over at the dashboard, he notices the clock. He's like, wait a goddamn minute. He said 90 minutes had gone by.
Oh, that sucks.
And when he scanned the area, he noticed something strange. Just how quiet the night really was. There was nothing making a single noise. No crickets, not a breeze, nothing. No leaves rustling. There was not a noise. Now to this day, because he didn't know what happened. He had no idea what happened. But to this day, he avoids that road like the fucking plague.
Yeah, I can't say I blame him.
And I forgot to mention, after that, after he had woken up, he also had a bizarre metallic taste that lingered in his mouth.
Oh.
And his ears had been ringing like he had been exposed to ultra loud noise.
That's gross.
And it sounds like by the book, we will later find out what the ringing in the ears is attributed to, because I guess it's a trope with abduction cases. But I also can't help but wonder if the son of a bitch was on the UFO when it was getting lit up by the machine gun.
Oh, I didn't think about that, but I don't think
it was that, but it was a thought that crossed my mind.
I was half waiting for you to say that, like, all the rounds shot at the machine gun shot at the UFO just kind of dropped on his car.
Oh, that'd have been fucked up.
But I did hear that, like, tinnitus and ringing in the ears is common with abduction experiencers.
So. That's weird. Hopefully the book will allude more to it and not just kind of point it out as a trope of abductions. But go ahead.
It's crazy to me that, like, you hear the just broad painting of, like, these encounters, and so much of it is left out. So much of it.
Exactly. That was the whole point. Like we were talking about earlier, like, there's so much more to these stories than ever has been alluded to. And I know, and maybe to be fair, a lot of this information has been dug up because of FOIA and shit like that. Documents being declassified.
That's probably true too. Sure.
Yeah. So that might have a little bit to do with that, to be fair. I'll give it a little bit of grace.
But it's obviously, like, purposely kept under wraps for a long time. Like, they don't want these things to cross over, intermingle, and people start putting the pieces together that while there's this UFO flap going on in this military base, we also have civilians out here missing time and seeing weird shit. You don't want those things to interlink.
Oh yeah, exactly. But on the 29th, the craft shows back up and everybody's just fucking super stressed at this point. The men had been on high alert. They upped security. Anything that moved, they investigated it, hoping to be able to react early enough to intercept it again. However, every encounter with it was the same. The craft moves with impossible agility, which pissed everybody off. All accounts, the base of security, you know, on, like, paper, base security is airtight, but they literally can't do anything about it. This thing just waltzes right in and basically just says, suck it. You know, I can do whatever I want. Surprisingly, I did find out that the military starts to have secret chats with Canadians. Not only because the border was right there, but at the time it was rumored that the Canadians were having the same thing happen up at their bases. And they began to speculate that this was some type of Russian drone that had the ability to disable nuclear facilities, which is really interesting thought process for 1975. You know, thinking about a drone that can just disable nukes, that seems bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Once the craft had officially left, the story then became primary focus for the military. And let me tell you, they do not disappoint, at least as far as shitty cover stories go. The best they came up with was that a Canadian helicopter strayed off course during a routine operation, which of course sparked unnecessary alarms at the base.
That we fired on.
They left that part out. They left that part out.
Think of night three, right? You're on the base. You've just watched the night before this Huey throw, say, 100 rounds at this thing, and it don't flinch. It don't blink. It don't move. And then to the point where they just turn around. They're like, yeah, we ain't fucking with this.
We're done.
And then night three comes around, and this bitch comes back again.
Yeah. Dude, I would just be like, I don't even know what to fucking do. This sucks.
I just do that.
Yeah, that's all you could do.
And then go back inside. At this point, just do what you're going to do. You know, like, you know, you got us. Do what you're going to do and leave us alone.
Yeah, there's nothing, I don't know, man. There's nothing you could do at that point.
I love that they're like,
it was except for literally just shoot a nuke at it.
It was a Canadian helicopter.
Yeah, that was the best cover story that they could come up with.
Boys, if that's a Canadian helicopter that just ate all those rounds from an M60, we need to reconsider our neighbors to the north there.
Yeah.
Because they're doing some things a little different.
Yeah, they got some shit.
The maple syrup up there doing things a little different.
Yeah, and they got it so thick and lathered on their craft, it just sucks up bullets.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's nuts. And that's what I was kind of, you know, getting to, which you hit on too, is like we've talked about, how crazy is it that all of this information gets left out in regards to these nuclear stories that we've all heard? Everybody in the UFO community has heard these stories. Mm-hmm. That these UFOs fucked with our nukes, shut them all, or activated them and then turned them off and blah, 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 blah. But we never heard about any of this.
Like you kind of said in the beginning, like, that in itself is such like a startle statement, like UFOs shutting down our nuclear silos. They don't need to say anything else.
Yeah.
If people like 90% of people are going to be like, holy shit. And just look into that. Like, how are they capable of doing this? Why are they why are they doing this is the big question. What is their purpose? They don't like look for the threads of evidence that kind of tie more into it being a fuller experience than them just, you know, hovering over a missile silo for 2 hours or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. And there's so many keys in that story to me, you know, the fact that it's like a lot of people spin that story as like a positive because they disarmed everybody. However, it seems like they're just taunting and basically saying, look, if we want to fuck you up, we can fuck you up. Yep. There's no getting around it. It is what it is. The fact that we successfully fired on it, and it was almost like Independence Day style, where it's got some type of force field around it, like the bullets didn't even make contact with the craft at all, is bananas to me. But one of the craziest things to me, and I know that there's always been kind of rumblings about it, but the fact that these things are running like marker lights, like our aircraft, fucks me up.
Yep.
That fucks me up.
Just fully like mimicking.
Yes.
So like that makes you question so much. Cause we're 100%. Constantly looking at the sky and we see stuff and we're like, oh, you know, it's got aviation marker lights. It's an airplane.
Yep.
It's obviously an airplane. I'm not going to look at it twice. You know, as soon as you see those lights blinking, You don't look again.
Nope.
You write it off.
Yep. Every single time. I can even remember times being out at your house and being out there and seeing craft fly over with aviation lights on it. And me being like, man, that thing is fucking buzzing. It is going by crazy fast. Yeah. But it's it's blinking. We never hear a sound. Yeah. But it's screaming by. I'm like, man, it's fast as fuck. But it's a plane. I mean, it's got the marker lights and shit on it.
Yep.
Never thought twice, man. Never thought. I just kind of always, like I said, you hear low rumblings of it here and there about the marker light thing. And I don't know, for me, it just, this kind of solidifies it, like, which I mean, it's kind of foolish of us not to assume that they can do that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it makes a whole lot more sense to come at night where they know our vision sucks and what then mimic what we have so we just don't pay attention.
What was the other case we talked about recently with the UFO, the black diamond hovering over the missile silo?
I don't remember.
Oh, fuck, what was it? Devil's Den.
Oh, okay.
Devil's Den, the first half. You're right. Before they were abducted, encountered that. I wonder if there was any more meat to that, if people were experiencing the same phenomena, missing time, possible abductions around that area. Granted, they said that was pretty rural. Like where that took place, that was well off the beaten path there in Missouri. So that could play into it. It's also interesting that they build these military bases, like these in the middle of nowhere, because McGuire's like right on the precipice of the Pine Barrens there in New Jersey. And I can't remember the name of the one that we were just talking about in this episode, but it was right on the right out in the middle of nowhere in Maine.
The Loring Air Base in Maine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. The book's by Gary Covella. Like I said, it's so good. It looks like wordsmiths. There's a chapter on wordsmiths. Then there's a Shadows Over K.I. Sawyer Air Force Base. Then there's the Nuclear Corridor. That chapter sounds cool. Fighter Scrambles and Vanished Jets. It says there's a shadowed response, government actions and secrets unveiled. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah, it's really fucking, it's not even that long of a book. It's 180 pages, roughly.
That's awesome.
It's good though. Like I said, just what I covered, like I said, I love a good story, man. And I love when people write all the fucking details in it. It makes such a difference in the story.
Yeah.
It's a night and day difference.
I'm curious to see when you get into the other chapters if similarities tie in to
likewise. Yeah, same. So it sounds like overall there's at least three more encounters, which I won't cover them all because I want people to, you know, encourage people to buy the book. But unless I read them and they're just out of this fucking world, then I'll talk about them. But I'm excited to see where else this goes, you know. And I would like to fish, like, in this book, hopefully it covers some of the story, like claims of it actually arming the nukes, disarming them, that type of thing. I would like to read that too.
Interested in the one chapter essentially making the scrambled fighters disappear.
Yeah.
Because it almost does feel dimensional, like interdimensional, if the bullets that were, like, because in my brain when you said the bullets were fired on it and it didn't do anything, because at first I thought they were going to bounce off, maybe fall to the ground, but it's almost like they're passing into something different, you know, like you said, absorbing it. And in my brain it's like maybe it was just sending it into another dimension or some shit.
Very well could be.
That's dope. I'm excited.
Me too. It's, I said, it's a fucking good book, man.
I would love to talk to somebody that was like on one of these bases.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That put locked eyes on it.
That'd be so, that's cool. Some of my favorite, you know, not to discredit everybody else, but it's some of my favorite stories, man. Like, we had the military dude call in about seeing Bigfoot through the thermals at night. And
yeah,
those are so fucking cool stories, man.
Yeah, that's rad.
Such cool stories.
That was a ripper. That's a banger.
It was a lot better than I anticipated, which I'm always thankful for.
Yeah, that was a ripper. Got my wheels a turning.
I love it.
It also, like, I've been reading a lot of Jacques Vallée lately and listening to a lot of his ideas, and his concept of what he thinks the phenomena is really makes you question whether or not these things are coming from outer space, man. Which we kind of touched on, so
I'll have to try to get some of his books and read them.
He did so much, like, deep research in the 70s. It's crazy. He even went on, like, he took a 20-year time span and he mapped legitimate, witness, proven craft landings, right? Mm-hmm. And in that 20-year time span, he got 3,000 of them that had proof, had evidence. And he even went on, he's like, okay, we're going to assume, so we got 3,000 that I deem are ready to roll. Like, this is legit. He said, we can easily assume that only 1 in 10 get reported. So that immediately boosts it up to 30,000. And he goes, a lot of these take place in populated areas. He's like, so if these aliens are here, like, doing experiments, taking soil samples and shit, He's like, we're going to miss a ton of them being in not populated areas. He's like, so you can take 30,000 times that by 10, 300,000. And he says, we also, like, a lot of these cases are reported from around like 6 o'clock at night till about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And he's like, I got to thinking, why is that? He's like, well, people are asleep after 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
He's like, so you have all this activity that people are also not accounted for. If they're not here specifically for people, then you can boost that up another 10, where you essentially you have 3 million in the 20 year time span. And he's like, even a margin of error, 10% of that, take it back down to 300,000. Like, if these things are here,
that's doing scientific load.
Yeah. Doing scientific experiments and shit. How have they not figured it out yet?
Yeah.
Like, they have all this time here and they're just constantly all around the place. So in his brain, like, the reasonings behind them being here are very different than like them just checking shit out.
Yeah. And even in my opinion, over the course of 20 years, 300,000 landings, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's a lot.
Which is crazy.
It is crazy, but it's awesome.
Yeah. They can get it. We tried to give it to them and they said no.
Hey man, all we can do is keep trying.
Yeah. We got one of McGuire though.
That's true.
We got one of McGuire.
True story. He got caught slipping. He was outside the sweet craft.
Yeah. Thought he was
the ops got him.
Thought he was a Russian spy. He was spying. I don't think he was from Russia.
That's a true story.
Anyway, Holocult, thanks for hanging out with us today. Hopefully this kickstarted your work week, got your Monday going. Check us out on all our socials. You know the drill. Until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and if you got some missing time in your car, it's probably a nuclear UFO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.